Put that coffee down.
I'm not here to waste your time, okay? And I certainly hope you're not here to waste mine. So I'm gonna keep this short.
Helen, we're both in sales. Let me tell you why I suck as a salesman.
The most valuable commodity I know of is information. Wouldn't you agree?
Coffee's for closers only.
Hey there, friend. Welcome back to the Behind Your Back podcast with me, Bradley Hartman, sponsored by the LBM Journal. This podcast, we talk about leadership, personal productivity, time management, and the craft of selling in the construction industry. And on today's episode, I'm excited to bring to you my conversation with Mr. Charlie Coggins. He is the market president of Professional Builder Supply in Greenville / Spartanburg. That's right. It's a slash. Greenville and Spartanburg, we're grouping them together in that MSA over there. Charlie runs it for BBS. And who is Charlie? He is a product of East Carolina University, the Pirates. That's right. We are going to be talking today about a little bit of football. My background in football as a failed quarterback in the greatest sense of the term at Eastern Illinois University doesn't stand a chance to the stories that Charlie Coggins is going to tell about his time at ECU. At what position? Well, you're going to have to wait and find out. He graduated magna cum laude with a business administration and marketing degree, and then he stuck around for another year, earned his MBA, knew marketing so well, they actually had him teaching classes there as well before he moved on. He's been at Professional Builder Supply for over 5 years now, and he is a dynamic young leader. I met Charlie in the 2019 edition in Austin, Texas, of the LBM Strategies event. It was a fantastic event. My time there was made better by meeting Charlie. He's young, he's dynamic, he's smart, and so many people have kind of pointed to this guy and said, this guy kind of represents what is exciting about the future. He can relate to everyone, young and older, right? He's smart when it comes to innovation. He is just a good communicator. He's a joy to be around. So I was excited to have him on the pod. So what are we talking about? Well, Charlie crashed the Combine. That's the annual collegiate meet fest in Indianapolis, where the best football players in the nation wear lots of Lycra and try to put up personal bests in sprints and weightlifting and things like that. Charlie was not invited, but he earned national recognition with some guerrilla marketing. This is one of my favorite stories. I've told it to numerous other people. Charlie does a great job telling it himself. Charlie talks about overcoming the imposter syndrome. This is something that, personally, I think we all deal with to some degree. I know I do. But it's really helpful for Charlie today as he leads men and women who've been in the business longer than he's been alive. So he walks through how to do that authentically and to do it confidently. He also gives some dual advice here at the end of the episode for some of our elder statesmen looking to connect and lead with the younger generation that they do not understand and struggle to build trust with, as well as the under 30 set, who's looking to emulate Charlie. They want the opportunity to be a market president at the age of 28 as well. They want to learn what he did to get to that spot and to build trust with leaders at all levels of the organization. Had a really good time talking to Charlie. I guess it's not surprising. Anytime we try to merge the LBM industry, our business, and college football, what's not to love? So, as always, thank you for listening. Enjoy my conversation with Mr. Charlie Coggins. So, Mr. Charlie Coggins, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Brad. It's good to finally catch up and get on here after several months of listening since we met back in, what, maybe this time last year?
I was trying to think. It was right around this time because it was the LBM Strategies event in Austin, which was an awesome time. And we went to a cool little hipster diner in downtown Austin and waited like an hour and a half to get like one drumstick, as far as I remember.
Well, I was talking, so we went with John and Chip Vaughn, remember that? And he was just in town the other day and we were talking about that. And if you remember, we asked, it was Megan
McCoy Jones.
Megan McCoy Jones, yes. And what's the best place for guys, for hungry guys? What's the best place in town to eat? And she gives us some hipster place that was great atmosphere, whatever, but it was shared plates and expecting one boiled egg to go through four people. And course, we went to that barbecue place the next day. We're like, this is what we were looking for. We should have never taken advice from a 70-pound person, but that's okay. Megan, we love you.
Yeah, none at all. The shared plates, and I think there was like 200 calories for like six dudes that at 8 o'clock were starving for some porterhouse steak. But yeah, that was the time. So yeah, excited to have you on. And I just really have enjoyed talking to you. And I think you got a unique, fresh perspective. So excited to dig in here. While this is our college football edition and we're going to dig into that, I think there's just so many things that we've talked about things that you learned on the gridiron and lessons on leadership and management and communication, all of these things that are really transferable to our business. So excited to dig in. We're going to start off like we always do with what we call our first four. The first question is, do you remember the first album you either purchased or received?
It was Bon Jovi.
Oh, all right.
On a cassette. And I remember I listened to the whole thing on a train up to Washington, D.C., and I believe it was Slippery When Wet, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I know, it was Bon Jovi, though, yeah.
Well, that's good, because Bon Jovi is a little bit more of my era, and I guess I'm, what, like 14, 15 years older than you? So I was glad to see. I thought you were going to go something much younger and much cooler that I wasn't familiar with. But what about the first concert you attended?
All right, well, that's where this gets embarrassing.
Yes, that's what we hope for. It's supposed to be embarrassing.
It was. So my brother, who's 6 years older than I am, had an infatuation with Britney Spears and took a trip with 10 of his friends and myself and my mother, of course, to a Britney Spears concert. Yeah, that's out of the bag now.
Was it the Oops, I Did It Again tour? Do you remember like where that was at in her career?
It was at, I know it was at Blockbuster Theater in Charlotte, North Carolina. Okay. And it was whatever the name of her second album, you know, the most popular album was.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Her sophomore outing. All right. That's great. That's awesome. That's one you'll remember forever. So you could tell your grandkids about that. She'll probably be somewhere in the pop culture history there. What about your first job where you were getting like a steady paycheck officially?
Officially, so it was a call center for a third-party ethics hotline in Charlotte, and it was really more of a double summer internship through college, so okay. If you don't want to count that, actually my first real job was teaching marketing at East Carolina right after I graduated.
Oh, good for you. Well, you said call center, and my heart dropped a little bit thinking that sounds terrible, and then you said ethics. I was like, that sounds like the worst job in the world. But
learned how to listen and got a lot of interesting conversations, that's for sure.
Well, dude, that comes up all the time. And I feel actually this podcast is something that definitely helped me. Improving your listening is an underrated activity for most people. So yeah, the fact that you could do that and know you were improving listening for sure was worth your time. What about your first car or truck?
It was a 1999 Chevrolet 1500, just bare bones work truck, single cab,
white,
you know, roll down windows, no powered locks or anything. And it was dubbed the heavy Chevy, though it wasn't very heavy. And this thing had like a 26 gallon gas tank, and gas was $4 a gallon at the time. And of course, I'm just a high school kid with no job, so I didn't drive anywhere. I made a gallon last me, you know, or a tank last me 2 months.
So. Yeah. So why was it called the heavy Chevy?
Because it rhymed, and that's what, you know, that's just what it got dubbed.
Got it. It's tough to argue with, but, well, that's funny. Well, so tell me, you were a long snapper, East Carolina. We're going to get into kind of what happened in your post-collegiate career. In my experience in high school and then at Eastern Illinois University, found that generally long snappers were tight ends that were kind of converted. Is that true for you, or how did you end up? Because very few kids come up through the peewee ranks knowing I want to become a long snapper, but they should, because it's one of the fastest ways to make a roster and stay there for a long time.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So as I was coming up through peewee and middle school, that was the case. I mean, 20 years ago, that was the case where It was an afterthought. The long snapper, the specialist positions, kicker, punter, et cetera.
Yeah.
It was, all right, who's the backup quarterback or who's the tight end? Who can just get it back there and right. without rolling? Okay, you're the long snapper. Here you go.
Right.
When I started out in Pee Wee, I had a coach. I said, hey, check this thing out. You snap the ball between your legs and you might use it one day. Now, we were very good. We didn't punt in Pee Wee. I never punted or snapped a ball until I was in high school. But
okay.
he said, hey, just remember this, and sure enough, it came about. So the position transpired into a more specialized position as I was getting to high school.
Okay.
Started taking the long snapping thing more seriously. Realized I was not. I loved college football. I loved the pageantry of it, just everything about it, and I knew I wanted to play college football.
Got it.
But was too little to be a lineman, too slow to be any of these skill positions. Couldn't catch. Wasn't fast. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I had no shot, so I was like, okay, well, let's figure out how to do this long snapping thing, and maybe I can fit in somewhere.
So you knew in high school that this was your opportunity to play in college, that really kind of specializing in this really unique, specific role, but if not done well, can have a huge impact on the game.
Absolutely. I mean, it was my only opportunity. I mean, I knew that if I wanted to play college football, it was going to have to be that. And so I began just specializing in that and played other positions as well in high school, but
sure.
began going to camps and training, and YouTube was just getting big at the time. So, I mean, just doing whatever I could to perfect that craft. And because, you know, long snappers are typically last on the totem pole in terms of recruitment. So I had to be creative there and trying to get my name out, et cetera.
Got it. So how did you do that? How did you find a home at East Carolina?
I had made some videos of my snaps. I had gone to some camps. I had kind of networked with a couple different coaches at various places. And initially when I sent my film to East Carolina, there wasn't really much interest. So I'd actually committed to another school in North Carolina, Elon. And long story short, there was a coaching change at East Carolina. I ran into one of the strength coaches that was there. He introduced me to some position coaches, came up for one last visit just to see. And it was like the first or second day that these coaches were in the office. And he looks over in the trash can and there was the film that I had sent the previous coaching staff. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. But, you know, just relying on the network and not giving up on that opportunity was kind of a lesson learned there. So that's kind of how I ended up there.
Dude, well, that's fascinating. Well, to be fair, if you have a really good high school film of someone long snapping, it's really going to look like nothing. You're going to be like, oh, he snapped it and it's down and it's good. Like, how many of those in a row where I don't know what something really special looks like, but I think that's really fascinating where you just think about, you always got to be, it's about your network. You got to be selling, you got to be talking to people. You know, that motion relates to emotion. The more you're talking to people, things happen. And that is something that we talk about in sales and leadership and even in operations, talking to your people. Good things happen when you put yourself out there and have new conversations.
Absolutely. 100%. Just like we're all selling the same stuff in this industry. My video looked just like everybody else's. Right. 20, 15 yard long snaps through the legs that land right here. Nothing different. So.
Yeah. So tell me about this. So you make the team. What does it feel like? Because I will never forget the first snap that I ran out on the field, and there was 20,000 people in the stands, which was 19,000 more than I'd ever seen in high school. And I just remember that. Tell me about your first experience and what happened.
First experience, like actually playing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I dressed out, I guess it was the first or second game that I had gotten, made the dress squad, you know, but it was a home game and you got to dress extra people. Absolutely zero expectations to play as a backup long snapper. Get out there, the first punt snap, I think the starting guy ahead of me went down, had gotten something in his eye, came out the field and didn't think anything of it. Well, sure enough, we get an interception, we go three and out, this guy still got something in his eye, and they're like, hey, 60, you got to go snap. I'm like, wait a second, I'm a freshman, I'm not supposed to be playing, there's 50,000 people here, I'm not even warmed up, what do you mean I'm supposed to go snap? Go snap. So we go out there, everything goes okay, get the snap back there, good location, everything. Well, punt gets blocked, taken to the house.
Returned for a touchdown, you know, on the first snap.
First snap ever. And the snap, like I said, was a little high, but we should have gotten the punt off. But it gets blocked. And, of course, I think we lost the game by 7 points. So that was first and only snap that year.
It was. Okay. And who was that against? Do you remember?
Southern Miss.
SMU. Okay. All right.
Yep. Southern Miss.
All right. So that was it. So that was, dude, and that's crazy how, and again, I think there's something broader here that is relevant is sometimes you have one chance and you come prepared, you do the best you can, but sometimes you're not going to get more of that. So that was your only snap that entire season.
Yeah. Only snap that entire season. Like I said, completely unexpected. And I felt horrible at the time, you know, because the snap was right here. I guess I'm not on video, so people can't see. But, you know, right here at the head, which by most standards is a good snap. But when you go from here to here, that's another 0.2 seconds. Sure. Boom, that thing gets blocked. But what I really learned from this situation in terms of leadership was after that game, Coach Ruffin McNeil obviously gets questioned, hey, why was Coggins in there long snapping? What happened there? I saw the snap was a little high. We lost the game by 7 points, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, everybody's coming at me on Twitter. Twitter was big at the time. God forbid you get on there and search Coggins. Coach Ruff stood there in front of the media and said, listen, it's my duty to have our guys ready to play. And pretty much just said, you want to come after Charlie, you come after me. We didn't lose this game because of Charlie. You know, just stood up and took the heat like a true leader. And that's really, I mean, my biggest takeaway, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah. So, Charlie, as you think about all the coaching that you received, whether it's your special teams coach or your head coach or lots of different styles there to connect with you or designed to connect with you, coaching is such a big component of high performance teams, of kind of changing behavior in small ways to make sure everyone's pointed in the right direction. As you think about the coaching you received at East Carolina, what elements or principles of the coaching and leadership there do you try to emulate now in your own team?
First and foremost, Coach Ruff was a player's coach, and I try to be a people's leader, I guess would be the equivalent. It was not an just super military authoritarian style leadership. He ran that program like it was a family first, not a business. And we had heard that from outside guys that would transfer in from Alabama, from other larger programs where that style leadership may have been successful, but people wanted to be in a culture that Coach Ruff had created.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned kind of the word family. And with several of our clients, there's some that really talk about the organization, the business, the lumber dealer as a family. Other ones have more as a team. The one thing that really jumped out at me is somebody and said is, hey, we don't want to have a family. The problem with a family is not everyone can be here long-term. And it's really hard when you try to vote out a family member. With a team, sometimes there's an expiration date on you being part of this team and you move on. How do you think about that? And how do you foster either kind of that family mentality or that team mentality with your own team there in Greenville?
Yeah, no, I think that in terms of being a team and leadership, you can't be afraid to be the dumbest guy in the room, even if you're the leader. You can't be afraid to solicit advice from others. I mean, whether it's superiors or boots on the ground, chances are that somebody else has been through what you're experiencing. They can provide insight, valuable insight, no matter what level of hierarchy they may be on. And so I think soliciting advice, input, feedback from all levels, from many different viewpoints can only help you.
Yeah. And obviously the question for you is you're a leader at 28. How do you go about making sure folks that work with you or around you or customers, well, not only are you 28, but you also look young. You could probably pass for 24 as well. How do you balance that when I think part of it's probably the humility, which you referred to, which is, yeah, I always heard of, you know, if you think you're the smartest guy in the room, you're probably in the wrong room. But I think taking that mentality of, hey, I can learn from everyone who's here. How do you think about that to ensure that you have some authority, but also you have some humility and some context that, yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys here who they may have been in the business as long as you've been alive?
No, absolutely. There's plenty of people that work here or that are customers that have been in the industry as long as I've been alive. And I look at that not as intimidation, but as opportunity. Again, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I will be the most informed. And actually, Coach Ruff used to say that. And it's about confidence and being confident in a decision and having the resources around you to know that you've Whether you made the right or the wrong decision isn't the important thing. It's the fact that you move forward and you're confident with it, and you can rally everyone else around that decision to move forward.
Mm-hmm. No, that's well said. The one story that you told that I was really excited to have you share more broadly was the situation once you graduated and you were interested in playing at the next level at the NFL, and you had this NFL combine. You were not invited, but you were there and you made a splash. Can you tell that story and how that came about?
Sure. Yeah. Again, going back to our earlier conversation, long snappers are the very last on the totem pole in terms of recruiting or the NFL getting invited to the combine. There's typically only one invited to the combine, okay, and that's so he can snap to the kickers and the punters, right? And let them do their thing. So obviously knew was not going to go to the combine, but still wanted to have an opportunity and get my name out there and figure out how to get a chance at the NFL. Had a buddy in my MBA program, and he was actually an equipment manager for us there as well. His goal was to be an NFL agent. And so every year at the combine, they have a big agent symposium or something like that. And he said, okay, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to network and shake hands and kiss babies and give out business cards. Mm-hmm. Why don't you come with me? And I said, okay, well, let's do it. Hadn't skipped a class up to this point, but I'm not on the football team anymore. I can skip class now. So let's go. So we packed up in a Toyota Matrix and drove through the snow all the way to Indianapolis. But rewinding a little bit, I had talked to my agent and I said, hey, thinking about going up to the combine, want to do some networking, obviously can't get on the field. I know people go up there and hand out business cards and hand out film. I'm a long snapper from East Carolina. It's going to get thrown in the trash. Trying to do something creative. What am I working here? What's my target market? What do these guys like to do besides evaluate football players all day? And Tommy, my agent, said, well, to be honest with you, Charlie, they drink a lot of beer, especially at the combine. And I said, okay. So one of our other equipment managers had an Etsy business that she would make decals and things like that. So I called her up and said, hey, can you make me a bunch of koozies that say Charlie Coggins, East Carolina, long snapper, height, weight, class, et cetera, and ship them to me in Indianapolis? I don't have time to wait on them. I need you to overnight FedEx them, meet me there. She said, yep, no problem. Let's do it. Get 200 koozies made up and get to Indianapolis, and walking around the hotel, coincidentally enough, just walk around the corner and Ron Rivera, who's the coach of the Carolina Panthers at the time,
former Chicago Bear,
walks by me and my former Chicago Bear, now Washington football team coach,
the non-Redskins, right?
We walked around the corner and my buddy goes, hey, that's Ron Rivera. I said, oh my God, it is. I'll be right back. Go chase him down, give him my spiel, hand him the koozie. He puts it in his briefcase, and I didn't really think anything of it. And so, I go around and talking to several people, coaches, Ian Rappaport, everybody who's anybody's at this place, right? And just start handing out, shaking hands, everything. Well, later that night, we go to I think it was Champion Sports Bar, where everybody who's anybody's in this thing, all the GMs, all the owners, everybody. And of course, my agent friend, who is the very extrovert, outgoing, talk to anybody, interrupt anybody for that matter. He's like, hey, there's Joe Gibbs or I can't remember who it was at the time. And go give him a koozie. I said, no, I'll wait till the hotel tomorrow. I'm not going to interrupt this guy's dinner and give him a koozie. And he's like, oh, come on. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. Like, we got plenty. We got 3 days here. We'll be fine. Well, I had four or five of them in my pocket. And on the way out, I decided to use the bathroom. I was like, oh, well, everybody who's going to use this bathroom is in an NFL office, so let me just leave a couple here. So left a couple at the urinal, a couple at the sink with my cards in them, and just said, whatever. Sure. It's just five koozies. And well, about 2 hours later, I start getting texts blown up from all my friends that are saying this thing is trending on Twitter, and I think it was Darren Revelle or somebody had tweeted it out. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was kind of knocking the koozie hustle. But whoever it was, his 500,000 followers loved it, ate it up. Of course, it gets to ESPN and ABC and trending on Twitter, yada, yada, yada. And it became this huge ordeal. And so I was the most famous guy at the combine that wasn't invited to the combine. And I had interviews and all kinds of crazy stuff the next week. But the goal of this was to print 200 koozies and get them out into the hands of these guys. And maybe a couple months later, when a team is looking for a reserve long snapper to bring into camp, sure, to just say, hey, let's see what he's got. And maybe it's sitting on his desk.
Right.
And, okay, we'll just call this guy. And it became much bigger than that. But fast forward a couple months and the draft goes by and, of course, don't get drafted. But as soon as the draft is over, get a call from the Panthers saying, hey, Charlie, Coach Rare gave me your koozie. we want to bring you in and give you an opportunity and see what happens. And, of course, it obviously didn't work out. But I had an opportunity in rookie minicamp with the Panthers and traced back to the koozie.
That's incredible. So as you think about that, what's the marketing lesson you take from that?
Marketing lesson I take from that is just don't be afraid to do something different and don't be afraid to fail. Because I would be lying to you, Bradley, if I told you that I thought that was a great idea. It was cheap and it was fast. That's the reason I did it and different. And so I think just not being afraid to fail and getting out of your comfort zone and doing something different can go a long way.
Yeah, well, I think it's just this point that comes up again and again is, yeah, if we're not afraid to fail and we're okay with experimenting a little bit and we have a little bit of creativity, any of those is better than being boring. And if you were just to show up with your business card that said, Charlie Coggins, long snapper. Yeah, you know what? I got 500 of those. We know what happens with those. And worst case, you're going to end up right where you were, which is no one called, you didn't hear anything. But that's what really stuck in my mind. You're willing to do something differently. And this is really one of those cases where you made an effort. There's not a whole lot of downside here with a koozie, but even the bad publicity from Darren Revelle or whoever led to positive publicity. Reinforcing that the cliche, there's no such thing as bad publicity, right? You're on people's hearts and minds and they're talking about them. So that's crazy. Well, you kind of talked about long snapping and having it be a craft and understanding that. Are there any other principles or mindsets that you have when it comes to where you are in your career now and kind of ongoing personal improvement?
Yeah, I think basically in terms of personal improvement, it's. I think you and I talked about getting 1% better each day. You know, I always wanted to be better today than I was yesterday. And that's another approach that I take into leadership. We always want to be better than we were yesterday, whether that's not going to always mean, obviously, higher sales today. But it may mean that we communicated better today than we did yesterday, or we were more efficient, whatever it may be. Yeah. But just small incremental improvements and build on the small successes. And the second thing was confidence. There's an enormous amount of training that goes into that, into long snapping. I mean, specialized focus training. I mean, you got one job. It's throw the ball upside down between your legs 15 yards and make it land on his right hip. That's all I had to do. So that was my goal. And I learned to perfect that, obviously, on practice fields and in the gym, et cetera. And you go out and people ask, well, is it different? Are you getting nervous in front of 50, 100,000 people? And absolutely, yes. But at the end of the day, you've got to remember that you've trained for this moment and there's nothing different. You've trained for this. You're ready for this for a reason. And in management and leadership, you can't really train for it. Everything's going to be unexpected, but you learn from your past experiences and build upon that.
Yeah. Was there any techniques or tips or things that you did to kind of drown out the noise? And I just remember it's kind of one of these deals where I was the backup quarterback and simultaneously I had this feeling that we're up by 21 on Middle Tennessee State. It's late in the third quarter. It's possible that 21 point lead is small enough that I could screw it up if I'm called in. And on the other hand, I want nothing more than to play, right? My first college snaps as a college quarterback. I had those at the same time. And I just remember feeling like my heartbeat coming through my shoulder pads and thought that my heart was just going to explode. You were doing this, but when you do it, I mean, my first four plays, there was very low pressure. I just had to hand the ball off. You, if you're out there, by function, something very important is going to happen. We're either going to punt the ball away or we're going for a field goal or extra point, right? Was there anything you did to kind of really stay calm, cool, collected, try to lower the heart rate if possible, and really just drown out all the noise to just really do what you've been training to do?
Yeah, no, I mean, I hate to keep beating a dead horse, but I actually had one of those little rubber bracelets on that said confidence. Okay. And I would look at that every time before I would go out on the field, and that would remind me, like, hey, you can do this. You're fine. You've done it 100,000 times. Because, yeah, I mean, even as a senior, my heart would still get pumping on every snap. We could be up by 70, right, and it's still, you get that rush. You said something that made me think of this. You said, every time I go out there, something's going to be important. Well, it's probably not quite as important as, you know, a throw you may make, but every time that I went out there, I had the opportunity to screw something up, but I tried to look at it, obviously, on the other side of the coin. And that's kind of one of the things that has been, not necessarily a detriment, but hard to overcome in management and leadership, is because a 99% long snapper is unemployed in the NFL, right?
Right.
So perfection was the goal. Yeah. And if you weren't perfect, you weren't playing. Now, perfection is still the goal. Hopefully, you can be great if you're not quite perfect. Yeah. So,
well, I'm watching the time. And again, appreciate you making this. And obviously, we could do this all night, talking football and leadership and the OBM industry. As here you are, several people that know you, that I know, you've come in contact with them, and they've been impressed with you and your demeanor, your mindset, and I think your current skill level that you have right now. Still very young, but people, it's very easy that I've seen to see, this guy's got a really bright future. He's going places. One of the things, we have two different kind of groups in the audience that I think I'd like you to speak to a little bit, is one, we have these folks that are coming out of school, or maybe they got started in the lumber industry really early after high school, and they're in their early 20s. And I think they would look at you and saying, how do I get on that trajectory? So I want you to kind of think about that group who's listening. I also have this other group who says, hey, I have sons, I have daughters who are coming to business. I'm 60, I'm 65. I'm looking to phase out. You know what I need? I need my children, or the next in line. I need this next group of leaders to be more like Charlie. So if we think about those two audience members kind of in your mind, what advice might you have, looking back on kind of your career, your trajectory to date, that you say, hey, here's what really served me well, here's what I wish I would have known then, or any advice along those lines?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, speaking to both groups of people, the younger and the older, if you're looking for that trajectory, don't be focused on the knowledge and the skill set. 5 years ago, I had no idea what a 2x4 was. And it's more, I think, about the work ethic and the drive and what motivates you and your leadership ability. I think that lumber, windows, doors, those are easy. You can train, you can learn. That's not a problem. But day in and day out, the bigger picture, what motivates you to be great. And obviously, millennials some people may have a bad taste in their mouth about millennials or a certain stereotype, what have you. But again, dare to be different. Mm-hmm. Show that you can work hard and continue to be great.
Yeah. All right, Charlie. So maybe the last question here, if you could study leadership, spend time with any football coach, player, living or dead, to kind of learn from them, not only about football, but also about life, communication, leadership, whatever. You fill in the blank. You get to spend time with any football leader, living or dead. Who would that be?
Any football leader. Geez. All right. I'm going to say John Gruden. I've always loved his tenacity and passion and just different approach, not even X's and O's, just the way he talks, the way he gets excited. I think there's a lot to learn there about showing your passion to your players, mm-hmm. getting the best out of all your individuals, and creating a team atmosphere through excitement. Like I said, it has nothing to do with X's and O's, and I just love his passion for what he does.
No, that's great. And I think you've hit on a couple of things where I would just tell folks, is, hey, regardless of what you know, what you don't know, if you're willing to work really hard, and you're willing to do that with some enthusiasm and excitement, you know what? You've got as good a chance as anyone in succeeding. And I think he really brings that intensity. And he did the Hard Knocks. So the documentary show on HBO last year, where they go through training camp with the Raiders, and got to see a lot of him. And a lot of it, you could tell, was very tightly staged, but I really enjoyed watching him. So I think that's a great answer. And the Las Vegas Raiders, they're off to a good start this year, so that he might just turn it around.
We hope so. He's an interesting one, that's for sure.
Got it. All right, I lied. Last question. Who's your favorite NFL team? Are you a Carolina Panthers guy?
Panthers, yes, sir.
Panthers, all right. So you got Teddy Bridgewater. You got Christian McCaffrey out there. Right now, where do they sit? Are they at 0-2 right now? Are they 1-1?
They are, yeah, I believe 0-2.
Yeah, I think so. What do you got as an over-under? Where do you think they're going to end up at the end of the season?
9-7.
Wow.
Being optimistic.
That is very optimistic. All right, we'll circle back with there.
Very optimistic.
I've kind of joined the bandwagon down here being in Dallas with my Cowboys. I enjoy watching them, but obviously Chicago Bears, the greatest football team of all time, 1985, Chicago Bears. Both of them are kind of struggling for different reasons, so I'd be happy with either one of them getting 9-7. But anyway, man, hey, I appreciate you making time. Always enjoy talking to you. Thanks so much.
No, Brett, my pleasure, man. I thanks so much for having me on. It's great to catch up.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. See you, brother.
As always, thank you for listening. I hope you found my conversation with Mr. Charlie Coggins to be worth your time and attention. Now, at the end of every episode, or many of them these days, we have a Muji moment where we make a recommendation on a product or a service, or in this case, a book that we believe would make your life better in some small way, very similar to the 0.38 gel ink ballpoint pen from Muji, the finest pen ever created by mankind. And today's recommendation is a book, and it is called The Lean Builder. This is a fantastic book. It's an easy read. And for many of us that have kind of dug into a little bit to try to understand how lean concepts can work in the construction process, this is a fantastic book. I would say this is the best book that I have read on the subject. And it is written by a pair of individuals who are experts. They are doing this themselves. They are operations guys. And they have quite the 1-2 punch when it comes to their names. Bear with me. They are written by Mr. Joe Donorumo and Keon Zandi. Sounds like a fantastic name of a band if they ever get together and want to play some music. Joe Donorumo graduated from Oklahoma State University. He's a senior superintendent at Lindbeck in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And Keon Zandi went to Texas A&M. He started at Lindbeck. That is where he met Joe. He is now the COO of the Skiles Group, also in Dallas-Fort Worth. They got together, started writing this book, and it's very kind of Patrick Lencioni style. Right away, the story kind of draws you in. These characters, if you've been and around or worked with construction folks, these guys you will immediately recognize. All the characters are these characters that we've worked with on a job site. The main character's name is Sam Brooks, and he is helped along by his mentor named Alan Phillips. Here's a quick little rundown of what is on their website. You can learn more at theleanbuilder.com, theleanbuilder.com. Sam Brooks, a young superintendent with ProCon Builders, has been given responsibility for the largest and most complicated project of his career. He struggles with all the common difficulties in construction, lack of communication, coordination issues, and other kinds of wasteful occurrences that rob his project of time and money, while leaving him and his team frustrated and overworked. Yeah, been there, done that. Luckily, his friend, mentor, and coworker, Alan Phillips, brings the benefit of his experience and his knowledge of lean construction tools and processes to help Sam learn valuable skills for improving the operation of his project. Together, Sam and Alan discuss the merits and explore the practical applications of daily huddles, visual communication, the eight wastes, managing constraints, pole planning, and the last planner system. After reading the book, I reached out to Joe and Keon, and we had a wonderful conversation. I'm really excited. We are scheduling probably for late November, early December, a time to get together and do a little audio video of them, do a podcast and some video to go with it to talk more about the book. It is fantastic. If you go to theleanbuilder.com, the book is $24.95. When I ordered it, it came 48 hours later with a personal note from Joe Donorumo. Nice touch, always is. You can also buy it from Amazon, but you're going to pay $5.05 more. So check it out at The Lean Builder. I would strongly recommend it to a friend. That's all we got. Thanks for listening. I'm going to leave you with our personal mantra. You know it if you've been listening. You, my friends, are owed nothing. Deliver value first.